Shut up and sit down.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. My name is John Giles, and this is Sports and Scotch. You're about to listen to the ramblings of the drinkers, and if you listen ever so closely, you'll hear the exact moment where the drinks kick in. On today's edition, we talk about the ways we can make sports better, whether by changing rules, concepts, or schools of thought. Also, I become a substitute history teacher.
Why do they call them the 76, by the way?
76, Philadelphia was the capital of the United States, so they're the 76ers, because in 1776...
Alright, so you're doing like the United States thing here, alright.
They were the original capital.
Okay.
All that to follow and more, so grab a drink, sit back, and enjoy.
Alright, I'm sorry,
but can you start? No, once you get drunk!
You're like the reason we do this.
Dude, I've been drinking fucking since 1 o'clock this morning. Or not this morning, but afternoon.
Give me, what are we drinking today? What are we drinking?
All right, John. So today, Scott has provided us with...
I provided it.
Scott provided the house. I provided the scotch.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Scott has provided the house.
I can't wait till I can do
and
this.
John provided.
I want to do this on the phone. You fuckers are somewhere else.
A single malt Scotch whiskey. We have Scotch whiskey, single malt this time. Last time we had a blend, and here we go. We got the single malt this time. We got Spey Burn, aged 10 years, Highland single malt, and it's been pretty good for me. But a lot of people over there on that side of the room don't like single malt.
I had an upgrade.
I've been told specifically over the last 4 episodes that with the name of Sports and Scotch, we need to do sports analysis and scotch analysis.
So we started off the blend. We did the blend last time. We finished it, remember?
I'm not a scotch, I don't know, sommelier. That's wine. I don't know if that's scotch also.
That's strictly wine.
It's going to be a sommelier on this podcast. I am not a scotch sommelier.
Connoisseur, I guess.
Right. Don't call my first name.
But what do you think about it? Like, I think it's kind of burny. It's not the greatest thing in the world.
I've already moved on from it.
What are you on right now?
I'm on the Nikka coffee grain whiskey. It's a Japanese whiskey.
This isn't a racist podcast.
Nope. It's a Japanese whiskey, which they equate to a really well-refined Japanese scotch.
I'm part Japanese. Can I try it?
Absolutely. It's in at least North Carolina, $60 a bottle. In South Carolina.
Yeah, that Spayburn 10-year was $40 at the ABC.
This is great stuff. Both, I think we're elevating our drinking. Yep. Recently, not on the podcast, but just for fun, we've indulged in some Pappy.
That was good. That was great.
The
problem with the ABC store I went to for the Spayburn was it went from like the $20 garbage drinks to like the $180 drinks. Yeah. But nothing in the middle. That Spayburn, and then like there was a McClellan. There was a McClellan 12 that was in there for like $45, whatever it was. But there was nothing in the middle. So that was like my only one that I haven't had before.
And jeez, dude, I think it's better on ice.
By the way, for those who aren't watching on TV, because we
that's fucking dang, dude.
We don't have a television broadcast.
It's good.
Ethan just drank that out of the bottle for a couple seconds.
How else would you do it, John?
On fucking the rocks.
No, I still have a little bit of Spayburn in my rocks.
It here. Would make it much tastier, Spayburn.
No, that's fucking good.
So, by the way, all right. So every week we've had a different group of people here.
You want me to set it on the table?
No, I want more because I'm afraid you're just going to chug it like it's water.
Probably, yeah. Just get that shit away from me.
It's great. It's great stuff.
So every week we've had a different group of people here. Sometimes it's Ethan, Burns, Scott, Ryan, whoever shows up. Right now, myself, John Giles. You guys know me. Ethan, you guys remember him? He's the one that gets drunk every podcast, and I love him for it.
Dude. I'm the drunkie here.
I'm trying to get that way today. Don't worry, I'll be there by the end of the podcast. And Scott,
Scott, that's a great name.
You don't have a last name.
Nope.
So, still. It's your boy, Scott.
I'm the opposite of Michael Scott. I'm Scott Michael.
Is your middle name Michael?
It absolutely is.
Really?
Absolutely.
Scott Michael Beep. Something like that?
Yes, sir.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Alright, so
Scott, I was Scott Michael before
Michael Scott as in like Dunder Mifflin?
I was
like,
actually Scott Michael before Michael Scott, so you know.
Dunder Mifflin over here?
I've gotten that joke before.
I won't tell that joke then. I won't tell that joke. If you've heard it before, I know you want to hear it any further.
I want to bring up something that kind of happened over the course of the recent time. Last week, I'm sure you guys have seen this already. The Yankees and Cubs went to 18 innings, which is equivalent to 2 baseball games. And they did it over the course of 1 baseball game. It was 4-4. Is that right? Yeah, it was 4-4 going into the at the end of the ninth. And then 9 innings later, the Yankees had a walk-off 5-4. They ended up winning the game in 18 innings. But it caused a lot of...
I think he's won.
This is like 3 or 4 a.m. now, right?
It's past my bedtime. That's all I know.
Did you stay up for it?
No, it's past my bedtime.
I thought you listened with headphones on to not wake up your.
Nope.
Your...
I only listen to Orioles games with headphones on. Amelia does not let me listen to any other game, so she only lets me listen to Orioles.
Where is Amelia tonight?
She's in New York City having the time of her life. Well, I'm with you, shitheads. So
cheers to that, man.
Cheers. Yeah, you know what? Cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
I've also been told to make a couple more fucking. You don't want to drink my scotch because you just pour it all over the
fucking
place.
Don't get it on his laptop, man. Don't get it on his laptop.
This is a $70 laptop.
It's a pretty strong laptop, actually. Yeah,
it's a big boy.
$70 laptop.
It's probably more than that. I
bought my laptop off of Amazon as well, and it's been doing great.
It's been good. This baby's been working fun. But
I have no comment.
So, with the fucking...
I just can't do it.
With the Cubs and Yankees going to 18 innings, there's
do
been...
Do you want to reset? Like,
no,
get rid
I'm
of all
good.
This?
This is hilarious. This is beautiful.
This is natural.
With the Cubs and Yankees going to 18 innings...
Great movie.
They have caused a lot of controversy with should baseball games end in a tie? And... While I might not be a proponent of ending in a tie, there's been a lot of talk about it. Whether it be from a lot of the players are saying that it's a player safety standpoint, that they're playing 2 games in 1 day, so it's causing a lot more chance for injury. Fans don't want to be at the ballpark for 6 hours. There's a lot of things that are kind of working in the favor for maybe we shouldn't let a game go to 18 innings. Maybe we should call it a tie. I've seen stuff as low as the 12th inning, call it a tie. Some people were saying the 15th inning.
What about the World Baseball Classic, right? Don't they call it extra innings? You have runners in scoring position to start the innings.
Well, actually, I might want to bring that up a little bit later. Actually, keep that on the tip of your tongue.
I'm gonna keep whiskey on the scotch on the tip of my tongue.
Keep the scotch on the tip of your tongue, with the World Baseball Classic right there on the end of the scotch. Keep it there. I want to come back to that.
Scotch, scotch.
Right now, I want to say, I want to come back.
Scott, scotch.
Scotchity, scotch, scotch.
Scottity, scotch, scotch. Oh, God, you guys have a problem.
In a glass case of emotion right now.
Right now, I want to go to... kind of keeping it in the sports and scotch tradition of past, present, future, I want to take this Cubs-Yankees game and kind of push it to people are talking about this making a real push for getting a tie in baseball. So it's pushing for a rule change.
Wow.
So I want to look at other, maybe erroneous rule changes that have happened in the past, maybe rule changes that have happened that have maybe... cause a significant change to the game. Someone maybe was taking advantage of a situation which caused a rule change. Maybe not even baseball. Over the course of all sports, I got a little list put together here. We're gonna start with some baseball ones. The first one, way back in the day, from 1867 to 1887, so for two decades.
How old are you, Joe?
Wait, fucking baseball started back then?
Baseball has been around for a fucking while, man.
Since the 1800s?
Wait, did you have it in Cooperstown?
I thought it started in, like, early 1900s.
One of the greatest trips of anyone's life is Cooperstown.
Really?
So, 1860s... Oh, I got the hiccups. God damn it. We're, like, a minute into the podcast. Sorry, I got the hiccups. 1867 to 1887, the batters actually had the right to request whether they got a low or a high pitch. So
I heard about that.
So, you have the ability to say, pitcher, give it to me down here. Or give it to me up here. So imagine nowadays, if Mike Trout walks up to the plate and he looks at David Price on the mound and he says, hey, I need it up high. Give me the ball up high. He's going to hit the ball out of the park every single time.
Yeah, I'll, totally, I'll give it to you up high. Yeah, totally.
So yeah, prior to every bat, batters would just request the high or low strike zone, either from the knee to the belt or the belt to the shoulder, and the pitch had to put it there. If you didn't put it there, there was a penalty. This was the early or the late 1800s. So I don't know if the penalty was a balk or a ball or the saber. They didn't do that much research into telling me what the actual penalty was.
You just want me to like throw it up to you and you just like hit it out of the ballpark? You're like, fuck that.
Sounds like slow pitch softball.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Nowadays, in the game of essentially, if you watch any baseball game now, it's all home runs. Yeah. If you tell a pitcher where to put the ball, that's a home run every single time. So. From 1867 to 1887, there was a chance for a home run on every single at-bat.
Well, in fairness, John, there's always a chance for a home run on every single at-bat.
When Mike Trout's up to bat, yes. That's accurate.
Bryce Harper, Aaron Judge, shout out to the Yankees.
I'm going to say, with another shout out to the Yankees, when Didi Gregorius, is there a plural? I don't know if it's plural or singular.
It is plural.
When he's up to bat, there's not a chance for a home run.
He has been a stable force of reinforcement since Derek Jeter's retirement. tell me, Derek Jeter has not retired in a manner that, you know, Didi Gregorius has not successfully succeeded.
Wait, isn't Derek Jeter about to buy a fucking baseball team?
He is.
Because he has the money, because he doesn't have...
No, actually, ironically...
He's not married, he doesn't have kids. Let's buy a baseball team.
So he's marrying... He married a supermodel.
Oh, he did marry.
Hannah Davis.
Woo! Yeah. Fuck it, of course he did.
Of course he did.
Of course he did.
Of course he did. He also is bidding with Jeb Bush, because he's not...
No, he's bidding with Jeb Bush. He's with Miami, right?
For the Miami Marlins. Yeah. Here's the thing, though, right? Derek Jeter and Jeb Bush are only trying in total to put up $50 million, because they don't have a lot of money, right? The Bush family...
But Jeffrey Loria, who's the owner of the Marlins, previously this year said the Marlins were worth $1.6 billion?
Yeah, that was really...
That's off the top of my head.
And we can't go into it, quite frankly, but that was a great number when the Kushners were about to pay for him. The Jeter-Bush conglomerate put in a $1.34 billion bid, but they were only going to put up $50 million. So now they have to raise...
So that's a small down payment. That's a small down
payment. Right, because they don't want anyone else to have control.
Yeah.
So now they're trying to put up about $1 billion in other capital,
yeah.
But it's... silent capital, because they don't want anyone else to have a say.
Well, okay. We are in the immediacy of this podcast, and we've already done a tangent. So, right, I want to go back to...
I can talk about this all night.
The rule... Fuck you and your bank law.
No, we're not going to fucking talk about Derek Jeter all night, dude. That's good.
And your Yankee fandom. I want to talk about...
Turn around and look at the Yankee plaque with Derek Jeter's autographed signature.
I want to talk about rule changes, you motherfucker.
Oh, that's Derek Jeter. Rookie year 1996. You're right.
I have Barry Bonds' rookie card right now. He's like pre-roided.
You cock golly motherfucker.
Like,
stop taking over this
Barry
podcast.
Barry Bonds for the Pirates?
Oh, yeah. He's still an all-star.
Oh, my God. He looked fucking skinny.
You turn around, you actually see Derek Jeter ROY 96 outside. I got that too.
So, in 1864, still Ethan, when baseball existed somehow.
1864, like Civil 1864, War?
Yeah.
That's when the Civil War ended, right?
Yeah, no. Lincoln.
1865 was when Civil War ended, right?
What's Lincoln's assassination?
You're a history major over there.
Come I'm not a history. I'm an economics major.
Right. No, you're
an economics major.
An economics major.
No, sorry.
What?
Wait, economics.
Yeah.
No. Okay, we're not talking about majors right now. Whatever. You're a history buff. You and your father are history buffs.
Yeah, I don't know when Lincoln died. Whatever.
You don't know when Lincoln died?
When did Lincoln die?
Who killed him?
John Wilkes Booth. In the Ford Theater. And actually, he ran to the fucking shed.
I'd like to contest that.
You don't know when, though.
Conspiracy! No, I'm just kidding. No.
God damn it.
John Wilkes Booth killed...
You people are the fucking worst to do podcasts with.
Alright, sorry.
Right, look, editing this.
Continue. Alright, sorry.
18 fucking 64.
Can we like, start all over?
No, I'm just gonna edit this down.
This is really bad.
In 1864 and from then,
fly balls can be caught on the bounce.
No.
So,
balls so not really a fly ball.
A one bouncer, that's an out. That counts as an out.
Wait. What constitutes a fly ball?
Anything in the outfield, anything in the deep outfield.
So over the head.
I'll read you this.
It's like you're fielding a. If you can properly field a ball in the outfield, it counts as an out.
So it says. It was a holdover from other favorite childhood games like Jacks in the day before gloves, it was allowed the players to avoid catching a hard ball. They would let it hit the ground to soften velocity, the momentum, and they would grab it off the bounce. As of the 19th century, as the 19th century wore on, the support for the rule wore on, and after years of hilarious acrimonious debate, why am I reading this? Fuck, it went away.
God damn, I don't know why I read that.
It went away.
Of course it went away. Because that's a stupid rule. Because you got to catch the fucking ball, not off a bounce, but in the air. Let's talk about this.
The rule was officially voted out in 1864. So it was only there for a year. But it lasted on foul balls until 1883. So if a ball bounced once in foul territory.
President Ulysses S. Grant...
We're not doing precedents right now. If a ball bounced once in foul territory and someone caught it, up until 1883, that was stolen out. So in fair territory, it was not until 1864. In foul territory, until 83. So still, kind of ridiculous outs.
That's stupid. That is such a stupid rule. But that was the beginning of the sport. That's great. Beginning of the sport. Where are we at? Where are we at now?
Well, in the beginning of the sport, that kind of leads me into my next one. Umpiring. At the beginning of the sport, was kind of a breeze. A breeze. So, being an umpire in the turn of the 20th century-ish, it was pretty great. You were chosen from the crowd. You were chosen because you were the most famous person in the crowd. So, you were either a prominent local member of the community, or you were, you know, a judge, or some sort of a beloved person in the world. And you were just chosen, and you didn't have to give a shit about the game. You just kind of sat back behind the plate and you just made your calls. Whether you knew the game or didn't, you were the one in charge. You said, I don't really like that guy. That guy's out. Fuck it. I don't care. If you were just, if you were the owner of the Woolworths back in the day, and you just happened to be at the baseball game, there's a chance you were the umpire.
Stay out of Woolworths.
Stay out of Woolworths.
Fucking, brother, we're out there. I love that, Jimmy.
Stay out of Woolworths. This is a quote. The old-time umpires were accorded the utmost courtesy by the players. They were given easy chairs, placed near the home plate, provided with fans on hot days, and their absolute comfort was utmost in the minds of the players. The umpire also received the choicest bits of food and the largest glass of beer.
When was this article?
So he just fucking chilled in a chair and was like, no, that's a strike.
That article was from Ohio's Marion Star in 1916.
Oh.
So until the 1916, 1920s-ish, you still had players or fans out of the stands acting as umpires. It took a while for umpiring to actually
So at this point, there was actually stadiums. It wasn't just like a... It was not a localized game. It was just... It's more national. And they actually have stadiums.
Yeah. The last baseball rule before I kind of go into other sports rules. It kind of goes on to what I was talking about earlier, how home runs nowadays are as prevalent as ever. And they... Back until prior to 1930... they were even more prevalent. because if you hit a ground rule double, so if your ball hit inside the ballpark and then bounced outside the ballpark, that counted as a home run. If the ball left the ballpark, fuck it, it's a home run. Just take your bases.
What?
We don't care. We don't care that much. Any ball that bounced off the ground and over the fence was ruled a home run. Rumor has it that at least one of Lou Gehrig's home runs during his 1927 home run race with Babe Ruth was actually a ground rule double. In fact, at one point, the very concept of home run was an alien one, because according to a post written in 1880, a time when very few parks had ground rules stipulating what was a home run and what was a ground rule double, because it was essentially just whatever happens, happens on the field. A player hit a ball over the fence and into a river, and the right fielder, confused as to what to do next, actually hopped into a boat to retrieve the ball.
Did he dive down to fucking get the ball?
He eventually gave up, unsuccessful in his pursuit. But fucking, like, stay weird, baseball.
Wait, you said butt fucking?
I probably didn't say that.
You said butt fucking. Okay.
The ultimate...
I'm out of that podcast.
The ultimate end of that sentence is, stay weird, baseball. Stay weird.
Yeah, that's funny, dude. That's fucking hilarious.
But... there was another couple...
So I didn't really know baseball was a thing in the 1800s. I thought it was, like, started in the early 1920s.
Oh, no, no. It was in the 1840s, 1850s. It was starting with just, like, rec league ball, where it was just amateurs that went out and played.
Before the Civil War? That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It was just amateurs that played, and then the Cincinnati Red Stockings were the first team to have the first... fully professional team. So there were, I don't know if the Red Sox is around, but some team at one point gave someone a professional contract. And then that kind of caught on, like, okay, well, we're going to pay someone to be good at this game, so might as well pay to everyone. And the Red Stockings were the first to pay everyone. And that was in the 1860s.
Like, that's crazy.
That was 1860s.
I'm wondering, like, how do you set up a professional league at that point? There's a popularity, and then you're like, you have someone come in and establish a professional league, and you deem everyone professional at that point?
No, it depends on who's under contract. So if we went out and started the kickball league tomorrow,
yeah,
and someone wanted to, like, sponsor us, we wouldn't be deemed professional until every single one of us signed a contract toward that kickball league.
It's very capitalistic.
Yeah. To an extent where everyone on the field is under the same contract to play on that field.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so not only are there the baseball rules baseball is an old sport, so ultimately the rules of old are different than the rules now. But other sports like basketball has only been around for about 100 years or so. And even those have kind of weird, quirky rules, probably the biggest of which, the most known of which, before 1954, there was no shot clock. So
what?
If you, instead of the 24-second NBA shot clock, 35-second, or I guess 30-second now, college basketball shot clock, you could hold the ball for the entirety of the game. And there were teams like UNC, old Dean Smith's UNC teams, would win games like 14-11 because they would get up and then they would just do four corners offense, which is just throwing the ball from one quarter to the other all the way.
And hold the ball for 5 minutes and win the game. Yeah.
Hold the ball for 20 minutes and win the game.
Holy shit.
Like, there was no offense whatsoever. It was just, we're up 2-0. We're going to hold the ball until we lose the ball and we have to score again. That type of just taking advantage of that situation immediately changed. That is no longer a thing. Now there is a shot clock because of that. But the other one that I found that's more along the lines of college sports is the dunk was actually banned. So slam dunking the ball was banned from 1967 to 1976.
Why?
All because of Lou Alcindor. So Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you may have heard of him.
No.
his college name.
His alter ego.
Lou Alcindor.
When he was at UCLA.
UCLA under John Wooden, yes.
He was so
throw
dominant.
John Wooden in there.
As a 7'1", 7'2", whatever, just amazing center in the world of 6'7" centers. He was just crushing everyone. He was able to do whatever he wanted athletically over them. So they said,
Yeah, you're not. You have to rely on shooting. You can't just put the ball in the basket.
He was the next Will Chamberlain at the time. Because he's so big, and he towered over everybody. He's like, oh, you're too fucking good. Let's ban it.
Yeah, he was just so good at college. He was so utterly better than everyone else. They just decided, yeah, you don't get to do that. You don't get to just embarrass everyone.
Is that because of his race?
This isn't a racist podcast, Ethan.
It's not, but like it could be argued that because we were talking about, what, 60s? Was it 67?
Don't make me record this again.
Okay. We're talking about 1967, and he is just running train in college, and people fucking hate his race in 1967.
Regardless.
Okay.
From 1967 to 1976.
Wait, wasn't he in college in the 50s?
That was Will Chamberlain. But alright, whatever. So
you said 67 to...
From 67 to now... Holy god damn it!
Alright, alright, okay.
From 1967 to 1976, the dunk was banned.
Okay.
And it took until the mid-70s, so those guys that kind of took over, the Dr. J, the Moses Malones... Those guys kind of reinvented it.
Well, Dr. J was more of a point guard than he was.
I don't care what he was. He was a dunker of his generation.
Dr. J was a point guard, bro.
I'm not saying, what the fuck does that come from? It doesn't care if he's point guard or center.
Dr. J,
like,
was sweet, though. He's good. He's good.
He dunked the ball, so...
he's a point guard.
Fuck you.
Right? All right.
I'm gonna leave the realm of basketball right now. I'm gonna leave the because you guys.
So where are you going from there?
Because you guys are assholes. I'm gonna leave the realm of basketball.
No, Dr. J. Okay, you're right. No, Dr. J was tall.
I'm leaving the realm of basketball, and I'm moving.
Dr. J was tall.
God damn it!
But he was really good at passing the ball, so he had a shit ton of assists.
Guys, podcast.
Dunking. The whole fucking point of this is dunking.
All right, dunking. No, I agree with you. Dunking.
Football. Done. Basketball, we're done with. Football.
No, I'm here to close out basketball.
Cool. Basketball's closed. Basketball goes. We've lost basketball. We're done with basketball forever. We're never talking about basketball again.
So the game of basketball was changed because they tried to ban dunking.
We're never talking about basketball again.
No, I'd like to because basketball's awesome. And so they brought it back, obviously. When did they bring it back? Because they realized
1976.
They realized dunking was a huge part of the fucking game. They brought it back in 1976.
They brought it back.
So is that why they call it the Philadelphia 76ers?
No, that's 17.
I don't know, I just wondered. Is it a strong coincidence? Strong coincidence? I don't know. Alright, somebody's drunk. It's good. Why do they call them the 76ers, by the way?
76, Philadelphia was the capital of the United States. So they're the 76ers. Because in 1776.
Alright, so you're doing like a United States thing here. Alright.
They were the original capital.
Okay. Thanks for letting me know, man.
No, oh, fucking hell.
76, oh, God. 1976, yeah.
So, football. Oh god, this is my best podcast ever.
See, this is why we need history buffs in here, because obviously my dumbass was not trying to relate 1776 with the Philadelphia 76ers, but of 1976 when they reestablished the dome.
Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah, sorry. I wasn't connecting things here.
That was amazing. That was truly amazing. Like, I couldn't have scripted that better.
But my stupidity was showed, and I feel offended.
I do want to, like I said, like fucking a minute, 6, 7, 8 minutes ago, I want to move away from basketball, because that is a bad conversation to have with you people.
So, what do you mean, you people?
You people! So I want to go to football.
All right.
And I want to say, did you know that the two-point conversion, which is oh so prevalent nowadays...
Scott, where are you going, bro? You good? Alright.
The two-point conversion is so prevalent that it's causing teams now to change strategy. Do you want to kick from the 15? Do you want to kick, or do you want to do a two-point conversion from the 2? Strategy is ever evolving because of them. But in 1994, the NFL didn't even have the two-point, or I guess 1993, the NFL didn't even have a two-point conversion. In 94, they adopted their two-point conversion, but college has had that since 1958. So they had that for a good, you know, 40 years prior. Then the NFL just kind of adopted it as, that's a good rule, we can go ahead and take it on. But for years, the NFL was stuck with an extra point. And only in the last 23 years, they have had the two-point conversion. And not only do they just have it, they have now changed it to the point where it's so changing the game over a crazy point where you are going, like, I can see Chip Kelly going for 2 every single time. I can see Bill Belichick going for 2 every single time.
Yeah.
Because they're taking advantage of that inefficiency. Do you guys have anything to say about that? Nothing?
I was just kidding. No. I would totally take advantage of it. Yeah, like you're saying, two-point conversion? Oh, you put me 2-point conversion on the 2-yard line? I will fucking go for 2 every single time.
Sorry, I don't understand why teams don't do that more often. The math is kind of simple, where if you're on the 2-yard
line... Todd Gurley gets you 3 yards every year, every down.
If you're on the 2-yard line...
No, I say that. Todd Gurley sucks. Nick Chubb in college can get you...
Fuck the Georgia Bulldogs! God damn it! Every fucking podcast!
Wow, it's like you think they're better than the Clemson Tigers.
They are better.
It's simple math where that if you are on the 2-yard line, I don't know what the actual numbers are, but let's say it's a...
Yard and a half.
Well, no, let's say it's a 50% chance you make it in the end zone or not. So you, in over the course of 100 chances, will score 50 times, giving you 100 points. 2-point conversions. On extra points, they're saying from the 15-yard line, I believe it's something like an 87% conversion rate. So over 100 times, you score 87 points. So a 50% conversion rate that you score 100 points on over 100 times, it's easily better than the 87% conversion rate that you score 87 points on. You should go for 2 every single time.
Right.
The two-point conversion, getting it to the NFL in 1994, was the best thing the NFL could have possibly done to improve scoring in the game.
Oh,
now people are more caring.
I love
people,
the two-point conversion. That's
good. All the fans always try to do the same thing where they try to play armchair quarterback, armchair coach, where they say, okay, this is what I would do in this situation. The two-point conversion gives that strategy a whole nother level of, ooh, what would I do in this situation?
Okay, that's right. You know, if they're down, they score a touchdown. They're like, I'm gonna go for 2, just so I can. If I kick a field goal later, I will win.
Yeah.
So let's take it a step beyond that. If you're okay with that.
No, I don't give a shit.
So let's take it a step beyond the 2-point conversion. Let's take it a step beyond going for it. What happens when two teams are tied at the end of regulation? What's fair?
Well, I guess that kind of goes back to. Oh, I guess this is football going back to baseball. But going back to the Yankees Cubs game at 18 innings.
Sure.
What do you do in those situations? Let's make a game out of this. Let's make a game where one of us spouts off a circumstance.
Yeah.
And a rule change could divert either way. So, talking about the World Baseball Classic, saying a man on second will...
Benefit the game, or
maybe hurt the game traditionally, okay. Whatever. So, one of us take a side... And then the other one.
All right, it's great. Okay, I can do that. All right, so
great idea.
So I brought the World Baseball Classic, man on second. Will that hurt the game or will that benefit the game, John or Scott?
Scott, I want you to go first.
Does that hurt the game or does that benefit the game?
I think it really hurts the game. As much as I love the World Baseball Classic for bringing everyone together, and I think that should happen every 4 years, I'm thankful for that. I really don't agree with runners on second in extra inning. If I'm up for arbitration in 2 years and my owner says, well, your ERA is...
Right,
6.25%.
The base hit would score a run. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I didn't get that base runner on. The rules put that base runner on. So why should I be penalized for that?
That's a strong point. John, what do you have to say about negation?
That's tough. I may agree with Scott, but devil's advocate says
devil's
I have to disagree.
Okay.
And I can see a disagreeing viewpoint.
because as a World Baseball Classic fan, I purposefully watched international baseball, and that's something that no one does before, I don't know, ever. I enjoyed watching. I specifically made sure I was watching when I believe it was Puerto Rico versus Dominican Republic. They had a game that went to extras that had a man on second, and I made sure I turned that TV on. I was watching it on my phone for the longest time on just like GameCast. And then once the man I actually got on second in extra innings, I turned the TV on. I was like, I have to fucking watch this. And I made my girlfriend, who doesn't necessarily watch baseball, I made her watch it with me because this is kind of history happening. Like, this is a huge change, and it was fun. It was exciting. It was so different from the norm that you had to watch. And whether maybe if we institute it as a rule, it becomes the norm and it doesn't become that exciting thing, it's still something that kind of brings your eye to the table where you're saying, oh, this is different. This isn't just normal inning 1-9 baseball. Oh, this is inning 10 baseball. There's a man on second. This is a whole new sport. It brings viewers to the game that wouldn't otherwise be there. And that's what baseball needs. It needs viewers. It needs more
baseball needs viewers, yes. But I agree with Scott on this one. It's like, put a man on second, fucks with the stats. And what would you... All right, so I'm going to bring up a quick, like, yes or no. Okay, we're trying to bring that up. What about putting a man on first so it doesn't affect the stats? Ooh, what would man. You say to that, Scott? Putting a man on first, John? Putting a man on first?
I'm going to say no. I think it affects the stats. Let the still, relief... Like,
so base hit won't score runs. We take that out of effect.
No, it
base
could.
Hit won't score
it
run,
could. A base
but,
hit could score
but it puts, run. But it puts offense in a situation.
Who decides who goes on first?
So there are... If you're familiar with Tom Tango, he's an author. He wrote The Book. It's the book about baseball statistics. It essentially says more or less every run value for every possible situation in the game. And there is a higher run value with the man on first than there is a run value with no one on. So I think a single with no one on is worth something like 0.37 runs, while a single with a man on first is worth something like 0.5 something runs. Well, that's pretty insignificant, 0.37 to 0.5, but that's in over the grand scheme of 162 games and baseball being so statistically oriented, 0.13 or whatever it is huge.
Yeah.
So you're giving someone that 0.13 run
right, so
advantage.
You're like zero, I mean, you know, zero outs and you got a man on first. This is a strong possibility. But it obviously doesn't mean base hit, you score a run. So
no.
You still get like, I can still K somebody.
I'd say this.
I can still, like, my reliever will still fucking do work, so you still have that defensive possibility.
I'd say this, just like a man on second during the World Baseball Classic, I would sit on the couch and make my girlfriend and I tune into that game because it's different.
Just to
the
watch
game
it.
Is
just to
different.
Watch it, but you wouldn't approve of it.
I don't care if I approve it.
Yeah.
It's different, and it gets me watching.
Yeah.
And that right. is ultimately all what entertainment is.
Yeah.
Is what will make you turn the TV on. And that would make me watch.
Make the TV turn on, but it changes the sport, so it changes tradition. Because we've seen sports change on tradition, and we've seen sports become different sports to what ultimately entertains you. Like XFL, for example. We fucking love NFL, and we love football. We bring in XFL? That was entertainment, right? But that, did that last?
Talking about football, one of the most fucking... God, infuriating plays when I watch professional football that I never see when I watch college football. I'll paint a picture for you. Fourth quarter, Joe Flacco takes his hike. He drops back four steps, or five steps, I guess, and he throws it deep. And the cornerback for whoever, let's say it's the Steelers, because fuck the Steelers. Sorry, Pittsburgh fans. I don't like the Steelers. I don't give a shit if you care about that or not.
Fuck
the Steelers. Pass interference on the Ravens receiver, and that is a spot foul.
Mm,
in
spot
college,
fouls, that's a good one.
In
yeah.
college, it's a 15-yard penalty. So if it's a 60-yard Hail Mary,
crucial,
it's
dude.
Only a 15-yard
that's
Hail Mary.
A great thing.
In the NFL, technically, if a quarterback had the arm, he could be on his 1-yard line and throw it 99 yards to the
theoretically,
other.
Yeah, like only Aaron Rodgers could throw it 99 yards.
Well, I mean... I don't know if it's Aaron Rodgers.
I don't know. I don't know.
No, I say that. I say that jokingly. Because so, remember the whole Hail Marys with Aaron Rodgers over the past 2 years? I say that jokingly. Hail Mary King.
So
he can throw 99 yards. No, he can't.
So technically, he could throw it 99 yards and throw it all the way to the end zone or the 1 yard line, whatever, and there'd be a pass interference on the 1 yard line.
Right. So the
and they would get a 99 yard penalty.
Yeah.
So
they
that
on the one. That's a game changer, dude. That's a game changer.
That kind of bullshit, because it's essentially, I don't know. It changes the game entirely. It is.
No, I agree with you.
That one single play decides a win or a loss. And football is not one single play. Football is a conglomerate of plays. And this one specific play can decide whether a win is a win or a loss. In college, it's a 15-yard penalty. And
just 15 yards? That's it? Yeah, personal foul.
It could be 90 yards down the field. It's only
15 yard penalty. Yeah, no. I agree with you. Okay. Well, see, I advocate the spot foul because that incentivizes someone to not fucking pass interference, right? So as a professional athlete, I'm thinking, like, I don't want to do my job wrong. So that incentivizes...
Sorry, for those not watching on our telecast, Scott almost threw up.
It's because it incentivizes a good defense, but it also is like...
Scott's throwing up.
There you go, Scotty down.
Scott's throwing up.
All
right. Ethan, finish your thought. We're going to take a pause after your thought for an advertiser, but finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right, so spot foul. Spot foul in NFL, it's great because it incentivizes a good defense that does not personally foul. So that's... playing to the game perfectly.
Playing to the rules of the game.
Playing to the rules of the game perfectly. And still providing a great defense. So, there's DBs out there who can do that. And they do it well. And I can just see, like, a spot foul changing the game critically. Like, if a DB fucks that up, you get a 40-yard penalty that could change the game entirely. And... you end up losing the Super Bowl. Like, that's crazy. Like, I can see that happening. And that DB will no longer be DB the next year. Because you're fighting for a spot. And if you can't defend and not foul at the same time, you're not fit for a professional league.
I'm the first to say I saw it happen. 2009, the Ravens had Frank Walker as a cornerback, and Frank Walker against, I believe it was Minnesota, early in the season, had, I think, 3 straight pass interference calls on him, and after 3 straight pass interference calls on him, he was not looked on the same light, and I believe over the course of the next 10 games, he was kind of demoted a little bit, but he still, even in his demoted role, still got multiple pass interference and illegal contact calls over and over again, and that was 2009. In 2010, he was not a member of the Baltimore Ravens. He did not make the team.
Did he get cut
because
of that?
Because of his cuts. Because of his penalties, he got cut. I want to go ahead and take a quick break right now to our advertising sponsors.
Scott will be back. Sponsors?
Oh, we have a sponsor.
That's what I'm talking about.
Scott will be back in 1 second.
Sports and Scotch wouldn't be possible without your help. Make sure to go to our Patreon page to help keep Sports and Scotch alive. There are a few set levels of donations you could choose, each with their own rewards, from a shout out on an episode to maybe even a shirt, sunglasses, or other swag in the future. While those levels exist, any donation can be made, and all will go toward bettering this podcast to keep it in your day-to-day. A special shout out to Jay Matz, our first Patreon supporter. Jay, if you'd like, the topic of your choosing can be discussed on our next episode. Just send an email to submissions@sportsandscotch.com. Remember, go to patreon.com, search Sports and Scotch.
All right, and we're back, and things are different now. We,
slight change of plans.
One third of us had to retire for the night for, I'm going to say, responsible reasons. Yes. I'm going to say responsible reasons.
He had a dog to take care of. That's responsible.
He had a dog to take care of, and he had a girlfriend to respect.
Yeah.
And if you know me,
And if you know Ethan,
we don't respect our dogs and we don't respect our girlfriends.
We have a lack of respect in general. It's not.
No, I'm just kidding. That's kidding. That's funny.
It's not to dogs. It's not to ladies. It's just a general. God, it's just a bad. It's just a general lack of respect that we have. But that kind of keeps us up in the moment. So Scott is no longer going to be with us on this particular podcast. But Ethan, you just advocated for the NFL spot foul. And I think Scott might have disagreed with you on that. I think he might have, and I would also be an advocate of the 15-yard penalty, because with the 15-yard penalty in effect, you could really do what I kind of love most in sports, in a team or a coach or a player just taking advantage of a loophole in the sport.
Like force a pass interference.
Yeah. So you could, let's say, same kind of thought process I had earlier, quarterback on the 1 yard line having to go 99 yards with however many seconds left. If it was a 15-yard penalty, literally for maybe 5, maybe 6 plays, you could just tackle all the wide receivers and just the wide receivers couldn't get open and it'd be a pass interference. But 0 yards, it was 15-yard penalty, but time taken off the clock. And as long as time is taken off the clock, that's all that matters at the end of the game. It was a year ago, maybe week 5, week 6 or so, the Ravens were playing the Jaguars. And we are up by, just enough. And 10, 15 seconds left, and Sam Cook, our punter, received the ball to punt on 4th and whatever it was in the end zone. And instead of punting, he just kind of ran around the end zone.
In their own end zone.
While he was running around the end zone, the offensive linemen and all the wide receivers and all the gunners just tackled all the defensive players. They just loaded them up to the ground, and some of them even picked them up and just fell backwards with them. And it was like WWE on the field. And Sam Cook was just, you could almost see it in his eyes, like, holy shit, this is working. Because knowing the NFL loopholes, you ran time off the clock, and the clock only, I guess, well, you can get an untimed down on a defensive penalty, but not an offensive penalty. So knowing these loopholes would benefit something like this, where it's a 15-yard pass interference play, where with 20 seconds left in the game, quarterback could drop back and throw it deep, and you could tackle the receiver, taking 7 seconds off the clock.
But then you only give up 15 yards. But they need 80 to fucking get a point.
Do it 3 times, that's 5, 6, 7 seconds a clock, and that ends up being about 18, 20 seconds or so, and that game over right there. You don't allow that final play.
You just defend from the 50-yard line.
It's more strategy with the 15-yard penalty. Then spot foul is all about offensive progression. 15-yard penalty is all about strategy.
Yeah,
and I love me some strategy.
That's a good point. I like that.
Talking about the differences between the college game and the professional game with the 15 and the spot foul, the biggest difference, and I know we've kind of touched on it before in the podcast, but it's such a glaring debate. I want to keep bringing it up. Fucking college football overtime, dude. It's such, like,
overtime. You're talking about college football overtime versus NFL overtime?
For those of you who aren't aware, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably fucking aware, but whatever, I'll still break it down. In college, you get the ball at the 25-yard line, and then if you score, or if you don't score, the other team gets the ball at the 25-yard line.
So if you score, if you score a touchdown, the other team needs to score a touchdown.
If you score a field goal, the other team.
And a PAT, But if you kick a field goal, if the other person gets the ball on the 25-yard line, they score a touchdown, they win.
And it goes back and forth and forth and back and back and forth and so forth and until there's a winner. In the NFL, if you score a touchdown first, game's over. If you score a field goal first, the other team has a chance to match or beat that field goal on the next drive.
Yeah, right.
But there is still an opportunity for an NFL tie, while there is not an opportunity for a college football tie. So what do you think is the better overtime?
I think what we should do for college football, I love college football, like, I think it should be backed up to the 50.
Okay.
And so that way, if you don't convert a first down, you're out of field goal range, so you don't have the opportunity to kick a field goal. So you have either have to punt and play field position, or you have to convert on fourth down. You're not going to play field position because obviously the next person, when you turn over on downs, they will be back on that same field position that you were at, say the 50, right? So if you're on the, if you start out at the 50, you say you go through and out, and you don't convert a first down, then. And you can't, you're too far out to kick a field goal unless you're Justin Tucker, and you can kick a 70-yard field goal, then yeah. But you go to the next, you get a turnover on downs, just like they were talking about, and they start from the 50, and obviously that means you have to convert maybe one or two first downs to get into position for a field goal to win the game, or potentially a touchdown. I think that would make it more competitive. I think that's a better thing. So you're not getting kick a field goal, kick a field goal, kick a field goal, kick a field goal, score a touchdown, defense. It's more like defense, you don't get a first down, defense, I'm going to kick a field goal, I converted a first down, I'm going to kick a field goal to win the game.
Okay.
So I
can see, if you've listened to the podcast before, you know that I have a passion, I want to make out with college football overtime. But I can see a debate for NFL overtime. Because
yeah, I can see that, yeah.
You get the ball, if you score first, game's over. If you only get a field goal, someone else has a chance to match. It kind of gives an opportunity to say, really, who is the better team? Because if I can score at will on you, I am a better team. Like, I don't care how good my offense is, how good your offense is, how good your defense is, whatever it is. If my team can go down the field in however many yards, however much time is necessary, if I can score a touchdown on you in a drive that you know you have to stop me, you're doing everything possible to stop me, if I can score a touchdown on you, I'm the better team. Like, that's all there is to it. Like, it is going to make the better team stand out nearly every single time.
Yeah.
Those of you who are naysayers are going to say, the random team, like, who was it? The Green Bay Packer that intercepted, I want to say it was the Seattle Seahawks and the Packers in overtime, and a Packer cornerback intercepted the ball and ran it back for a touchdown the first play of overtime. I don't remember any names. I don't even know if I got the teams right. But I remember this happened in the very first play of overtime. Some people are saying, you know, the better team didn't win that game. But if you are the offense, you know 100% you have to score. So if you don't run the most effective plays, if your quarterback isn't as precise as possible, then you don't deserve to win. And if the defense isn't able to stop an offense who is doing, you know, as a defense, you know exactly what the offense is going to do to you. You know their best plays. And if you aren't able to stop them, you don't deserve to win. So
I can see that.
Even if it goes down to a tie, all right, I'd rather have a tie than have the wrong team win. Let's say it's the Browns and the Patriots. We all know the Patriots are a better team than the Browns. But if for some fucking ungodly reason, the Browns are somehow able to manage some sort of weird overtime where turnovers happen or whatever, and it ends in a tie, we all know the Patriots are a better team than the Browns. One more that I have that isn't necessarily it's not a rule that has changed in the past, and it's not a rule that is different in two different leagues. It's just a rule. It's not even a rule. It's just a thought process that I want changed in general. It's just something that there needs to be a change right now because I'm tired of it. Two different baseball stats, wins and RBI. I have hatred toward pitcher.
No, it's you know, it's tough. I can see it. Like a win, it's very loosely.
So a pitcher win
average, yeah.
Let's say a pitcher's on the mound and he goes 5 innings and he allows 8 runs. All right, so he has now had a terrible outing.
pitcher allows 8 runs, but the offense happens to score 9 runs in those first 5 innings. It's 9-8 when he leaves. Over the course of the next couple innings, nothing happens. And another pitcher goes in and has a perfect 4 innings. And whoever the other pitcher is, he has, I don't know, he got half fucking 12 strikeouts over 4 innings. Like the absolute best possible outing he could ever have. He doesn't get the win, even though he's the much better pitcher in this scenario. The first guy, who allows 8 runs, gets the win because that's how baseball works. The win itself is such an archaic rule where whoever starts the game and doesn't fuck up the most gets the win, as opposed to some relievers or some closers who are the real guys.
Because you got mid relief, and like nowadays you got mid relief, and you got relief, and relief after that, and you got relief, and then closer. Yeah,
yeah.
And you're putting out 5 pitchers a game. Who gets the win?
Those guys in the bullpen. Some of those bullpen guys pitch 2, 3, 4 innings, or even the ones who pitch 1 might pitch the 3, 4, 5 hitters who are the best hitters in the... If you strike out the 3, 4, 5 hitters of the Cubs, like, you're such a good pitcher, but you don't get credited for the win because you're a closer or you're a long reliever, whatever it is. I think the win itself is a stat that is so overrated. And when people look at who are the best pitchers in baseball, Rick Porcello had 21 wins last year. Rick Porcello was like the 4th best pitcher on his staff. He wasn't even a good pitcher on his staff, and yet he still won the Cy Young because he had 21 wins. Wins are so fucking overrated, it's infuriating. And it's the same thing with RBI, because...
No, the pitching game has definitely changed over the years.
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
I agree. Back in the day,
agree,
Cy Young having 500 and something wins... That's never going to be beaten because
no one
give a shit about wins anymore.
That's that'd be something good to fucking talk about is wins that or records that will never be broken.
It's a good idea. Can we...
Wayne Gretzky?
Well,
think
about write them all down. Next podcast. Can we do that?
Next podcast. Let's fucking do it. Wayne Gretzky? Yeah.
Let's do that next podcast.
Nolan Ryan strikeouts? Yeah.
I want to finish yelling... And being infuriated by the RBI. Give me 1 second on the RBI.
Talk about the RBI. All
right.
You talk about the wins, you haven't talked about the RBI.
So so many times, for years, we have measured players by their batting average, their home runs, and their RBI. All right? So batting average is something that is player dependent. So you have to specifically get that batting average. Home runs, player dependent. You have to specifically hit those home runs out of the ballpark. RBI is dependent on who is on the base in front of you. So if you were Chris Bryant or whoever out of the Cubs organization and you get, 80 chances at bat with a man in scoring position and you get 40 RBI, right? You have 40 RBIs on the scorebook. Good for you. That's all anybody sees is 40 RBI. They don't see the 80 chances. Then, on a team like the Padres, if you are Hunter Renfroe might get 50 chances with a man on base, and he might get 40 RBI. All right? Hunter Renfroe gets the same number of RBIs as Chris Bryant, and yet he has significantly fewer chances than Bryant because his offense is much worse. Bryant's offense, as a Cub, gets men on base every single inning. Their OBP is crazy. They always have men on. They're always scoring runs. They're always doing something. So he should get more RBI.
Right. So wouldn't that be about strategic lineup by the manager?
And I don't care if it's manager or not. That's not about the player. So we should maybe give RBIs to the manager. Maybe give RBI to the team. Do whatever you want. But that RBI does not deserve to go to the player. Because all he did was bat in the lineup given to him. Whoever's on base, if there's a man on first and second, man on first and second and third, that's not up to him. That happened prior to his
life. I got a question real quick. Does a walk-off walk count as an RBI?
Yes. Yeah, it does. Which is another reason why the RBI is fucking dumb. Because the pitcher screwed up pitching you 4 pitches.
Yeah.
You got on base, and because the pitcher screwed up, you got a run attached to your fucking... FanGraphs page.
A walk-off walk counts as an RBI?
These types of things are why the RBI is so dependent on how your team is.
Right, so that's why we're shifting to more slugging percentage.
So no, well, no, not necessarily. I believe the better stat as opposed to RBI is batting average with runners in scoring position.
Whip.
No, that's a pitcher stat.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry, fucking.
You just yelled a stat.
I'm just like you. I don't know shit about baseball.
Batting average. Like, all right, so batting average with running in score with runners in scoring position is if there's a man on second or third.
Yeah.
How you fare at bat. So a lot of players might have a 300 batting average with a 360 batting average with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
He bats better when there are men on, when he's able to push someone in. Some people are alternate. But I think the RBI stat should go away while we should really acknowledge the runners in scoring position stat, because that is... It takes away how many times the runners are in scoring position, and it really puts it in the perspective of it doesn't matter how many times they're on there. How do you fare when men are on the base? And that's kind of more that matters in baseball. Is are you a clutch hitter? Are you good with the guys on? Not, oh, you got 100 chances to get someone in. Can you bat them in 40 times?
So that's the good thing of reaching out, and we're going to determine statistics on all around baseball. Like, that's the good thing about introducing statistics to baseball.
So if you look at my... I just released on Sports and Scotch, on sportsandscotch.com, I just released a WAR breakdown of the Charlotte Knights. I've been following them all summer. You guys know about this. AAA and all minor leagues, they don't release their WAR project or their WAR numbers throughout the year. Their wins above replacement. So I've kind of manufactured my own breakdown list, and I've done that. And that WAR projection, that WAR breakdown, is specifically off independent numbers. So it doesn't include any RBI. It doesn't include anything.
So it's a subjective projection.
It's not a projection. It's what they've already done. It's an analysis of what they've already done. It is specifically only with them in mind. So it takes away any time there's ever a man on base. It takes away any time there's any sort of error in the lineup. It's all about their up to bat and how they fare when they're at bat.
Good, yeah.
So it breaks down who is the better player, as opposed to when you look at RBI, who has the better offense and is able to take advantage of that offense. But before we leave today, I do have to call it quits right now, Ethan. I'm sorry. I do want to kind of direct people along the way. I do a very poor job of doing this throughout each podcast. I want to make sure you guys are checking out our Twitter page, Sports and Scotch, checking out our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportsandscotch, and checking out our website, www.sportsandscotch.com. We're pretty fucking basic. Pretty much if you type in Sports and Scotch into Google, you'll find us. And whatever it is.
Yeah, we will soon have an Instagram.
If you want to run the Instagram, we can have it. I'm not running the Instagram. Also, actually, thank you. I respect that. Because if anybody wants to work for us, whether that be social media, or that be writing for my site, or if you want to be a guest on the podcast, or whatever it is, if you want to do anything with Sports and Scotch, please reach out to us at submissions@sportsandscotch.com or john.giles@sportsandscotch.com. I'd be happy to have you. We don't pay you at all. You won't receive a dime. But it's all about caring about us, right? So fuck it, I don't care.
No, if you can do it unpaid and you can get us sponsored, we will pay you.
Well, we already have one sponsor, so that's enough for us. All right. We'll settle for L1. We're very happy for what we have. I appreciate it. And I guess, well, in lieu of Scott being here, I guess my name's John Giles.
My name's Scott.
And I'm Ethan Nichols.
And that's Sports and Scotch.